Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of The Depot Dive. I'm your host, Ross McCorkle. And above me here on the screen is my co-host, Joe Clark. Obviously, this is the first episode since the 2024 NFL Draft took place, so we have a whole lot to talk about today. Joe, how did you enjoy the draft?
I love the work the Steelers did. Personally, I think I probably drank more caffeine than I ever have in my entire life over those, 4 days. But they stayed put. They got their guys. A lot of guys, we kind of had pegged to them, through either pre-draft visits or pro day visits. I just thought it was really great work. They stayed put. The board broke perfectly. Omar Khan in the front office did a great job shoring up that offensive line depth, adding, versatile playmaking receiver in Roman Wilson. I thought it was awesome. I thought they really got better this weekend.
I, too, thought I was drinking the most caffeine of my life. my wife was out of town, and she normally handles the morning coffee here in the household. And so I was left to fend for myself during the grind of the draft. I ran specifically to the store to grab some, K-cups, just something easy in the morning for me. And about halfway through the 3 or 4 day grind of the draft, I realized I was drinking decaf. So joke's on me there. I was chugging it to try and trick my body into thinking it was real coffee. But yeah, it was quite the experience running on low throughout the event. But getting back to the draft, the Steelers, obviously, you just said with the offensive line addressing the big men up front, that was kind of the theme of the draft. Three of, their first five picks were on offensive linemen, including two of the first two picks in Troy Fautanu and Zach Frazier being brought to the team. And, this is kind of what most people anticipated happening. Maybe not the exact players most people anticipated, especially with Troy Fautanu. He didn't receive a ton of kind of discussion from Steelers media or anyone talking about, linking which player is going to come to the Steelers. He wasn't necessarily the focus of most of those discussions because a lot of people thought he would be gone prior to pick 20. So the fact that the Steelers didn't have to trade up at all, they were able to grab their guy at 20, and Omar Khan after the draft saying, this is the top rated guy on our board, regardless of position at this pick. So I think the Steelers got a hell of a steal in that pick. And what do you think about the selection of Fautanu?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, he's a mauler. He was really the anchor of that Washington offensive line last season. And him being there was obviously kind of a gift. The six quarterbacks going in the top 12. I mean, I don't think a lot of people had Penix off the board to Atlanta. Bo Nix going to Denver. That obviously was huge for, the hopes of an offensive lineman falling. Denver was a team that, potentially could have looked at the position. Atlanta expected to take an edge, like Dallas Turner, who ended up falling. So, then Jared Verse goes later, and it kind of just pushes those guys back down the board. And Fautanu's sitting there for Pittsburgh at 20. And, he's somebody that, whether he plays the left or the right side, he probably could be a day one starter. And now you have, two long-term tackles with Fautanu and Broder Jones, back-to-back first-round picks, and two guys that I think are really going to help in the run game. I mean, Jones struggled in pass protection last year, but I think he'll develop. Obviously, rookie tackles usually struggle. Just two guys that I think can anchor the offensive line now for years to come. And really good job by Khan to, kind of wait it out and be patient, not give up assets to move up, even though the team, really seemed to love Fautanu and keep sitting there at 20. It was great work.
Yeah, the discussion of, which side he's going to play on and Broderick Jones, obviously, they stated their intent to move him back to the left side, but it's kind of an interesting situation. I think we talked about this in one of the episodes prior to the draft, but Broderick Jones, about halfway through this season, will have more right tackle experience if they choose to start him there to start things out. He'll have more right tackle experience than he does left tackle experience, including college and the NFL, because he had those 19 starts in college on the left side. He had one start in the NFL on the left side in week 5 against the Ravens before they played him in the final. I believe it was 11 games, including the playoffs. So he has a bunch of experience now on the right side. Troy Fautanu, on the other hand, only has those two snaps on the right side in college, as opposed to, I believe, 29 starts on the left side. So Yeah, it'll be an interesting decision. I mean, I think Fautanu has a lot of the skill set that could probably translate to either side, but it's really a case-by-case basis with these guys, how comfortable they might feel. I think Fautanu said that the coaches at Washington cross-trained him in practice, so there's stuff going on behind the scenes that isn't necessarily evident on in the games and the snap counts in the actual games, but yeah, it'll be an interesting thing. And like you said, the first round pick back-to-back years with offensive tackle. The last time the Steelers had selected one in the first round at all was 1996 with Jermaine Stevens. So a big investment and kind of a signaling what their philosophy is and how they want to build this team. Moving on to the second round pick, Zach Frazier. I think this was obviously a guy that got a lot more buzz linked with the Steelers prior to the draft. Out of West Virginia, local prospect. They brought him in for a pre-draft visit, as they did Troy Fautanu. And he just kind of has that Steeler mentality and that Steeler kind of essence about him. He just, I think our Alex Cazora pegged him very early on in the draft process as a guy that he could easily see fitting with the Steelers. Our Dave Bryan ended up putting him in his mock in the first round, just kind of thinking that a center wouldn't be there in the second. So again, kind of some value with getting Zach Frazier in the second round without having to trade up. And this will be a theme throughout this episode, but he's a guy with a extensive wrestling background in high school. So he's got some of that body control, leverage, athleticism, multi-sport athleticism about him. So what do you feel about the Zach Frazier selection?
Yeah, and another shout out to Alex. I think he compared him to Ben Jones, the former Titan center under Arthur Smith, in the post-draft press conference with Arthur Smith. I'm pretty sure he threw that same Ben Jones comp out there. So good work on that. But I love it. I mean, he's a huge upper body. He can control dudes at the point of attack. I mean, I think in his wrestling career, what, his longest match was 51 seconds and he was undefeated. So, I mean, he's a beast. He's got great hands. He's got a ton of power. He's kind of that guy that you really like to have at the pivot that can move people, that can really be that long-term center. And I know Mark Hahn said back in March he wants to find the next great Steelers center. Frazier was kind of lumped in that top three with Graham Barton and Jackson Powers Johnson. And, you know, I think Frazier talked about how, you know, he's kind of excited to try to live up to that standard. He's saying the right things, and I think he's got the great mentality, great mindset, and I think he's going to be a mauler and a people mover in the run game, especially for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the pick overall. Duke Manyweather, the offensive line guru or whatever you want to call him, he trained several college players, several current NFL offensive linemen through his OL Masterminds Academy or whatever it I guess is technically called. And he had the opinion that Frazier is the top center in the draft. And really, if you look at it, I mean, Jackson Powers Johnson ended up getting drafted as a guard. Graham Barton, we've talked about him. He's kind of a more potentially of a conversion project just because he hadn't played center since, 2020 in his freshman season. So Zach Frazier coming in with over 2,600 snaps at center. The Steelers needed a week one impact guy, and I really think this was the best week one impact guy in the draft at the position. So you're talking about two high, early impact guys over the first two rounds. Moving into the third round, the Steelers did need a wide receiver in this draft. There was a lot of chatter leading up to the draft of, are the Steelers going to conduct some kind of big trade? And, there was some reports or speculation floating around out there during the draft that maybe something was going to happen. I think Deebo Samuel was the specific name that was kind of linked in the middle of the draft there. And actually, that report came out right around the Zach Frazier pick, so I don't know if there was any smoke to maybe maneuvering, in that second round for somebody like Samuel. But regardless, nothing ended up happening, and we'll talk about the receiver situation a little later. But they ended up selecting Roman Wilson out of Michigan. This was a guy that they had their eyes on back since the Senior Bowl. Joe, what do you think of Wilson?
Yeah, I think he's a guy that Mike Tomlin kind of fell in love with in the Senior Bowl. Arthur Smith alluded to having a pro day dinner with him. So even though he didn't come in for a pre-draft visit, he's a prospect, the team is very familiar with. One thing I love about Wilson that I know we've talked about before is just his mentality with blocking. He talked about it on Cam Hayward's podcast, how much he loves to block and just pancake a guy. That's going to play really well, especially under Smith in Pittsburgh. And his versatility too. He can play outside. He's probably better suited in the slot, but right now the Steelers don't really have that other outside guy, as we'll talk about later. I think they will still find a way to add one. But you know, he's a guy that he's always moving, never takes a route off. Like with I think one of his big the best things that he can do with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields is he's gonna be able to extend plays. Like underneath, he's gonna keep moving, he's gonna find a way to get open. Those two guys can scramble, they get out of the pocket. Wilson's gonna be one of those guys, you know, third and four, third and five underneath that they turn to, and he's gonna be a guy that can move the chains and make plays. He might, you know, he's got the speed to, you know, kind of be a deep threat, but you know, he's a seven catch, 62-yard sort of guy is kind of how I view him in the NFL. Just one of those guys that can eat up some chunk yardage, move the sticks, and be a really valuable asset for the Steelers. I was surprised he was there in the third round. He was I think the 14th receiver off the board. He was the best receiver on the best team in college football last year at Michigan. And just, you know, hearts and smarts, just seems like a really great kid. And I think he's gonna add a lot to this receiver room.
Yeah, and there was actually some reports floating around, and you never know on these draft day reports, but there were some reports floating around that the Steelers were interested in making him their second round pick if Zach Frazier wasn't available. And so once again, kind of marrying value with need, and the Steelers once again kind of fill a roster hole, landing a player that many probably didn't think they would land at that spot. So, and you made a great point about extending plays. I think the study that I did a couple weeks ago shows Justin Fields and Russell Wilson as they are the slowest from snap to actually throwing the football. I think, you know, Justin Fields is just a hair over 3 seconds, and Russell Wilson's just a hair under 3 seconds, but they are the slowest in the NFL last season at actually getting the football out of their hands or getting sacked after the snap. You know, that's obviously because they can create plays with their legs, extend plays. And so a guy like Roman Wilson, who can find the soft spots in the zone, he's gonna, you know, not take the play off. If he runs his route and nothing's happening, you know, he's going to work his way back to the football, and those will be big assets to the Steelers. In the second pick of the third round there at pick number 98 overall, they selected NC State linebacker Peyton Wilson. And this is kind of receiving maybe more buzz than any other pick that the Steelers made, depending on which outlet you're looking at. But very good value. Some viewed him as the top linebacker in the draft, another Senior Bowl guy that Mike Tomlin and company would have gotten exposure to down in Mobile. You can't really say enough good things about this player. The only issue is the injury stuff. So, what's your take on Peyton Wilson?
Yeah, honestly, the injury stuff doesn't necessarily concern me, especially after, and everybody should check it out, reading Dr. Mel's article. I mean, he had the two shoulder surgeries. He doesn't have an ACL. Well, neither did Hines Ward, and Hines Ward is a Hall of Fame finalist. So with Wilson, given the injuries and the surgeries he's had, I'm not really sure that, like Dr. Mel said, there's not a significant risk of re-injury. And he's a perfect complement to Patrick Queen on the linebacker room, you know? He's a three-down linebacker. He can cover sideline to sideline. He's got 4.4 speed, and he demolishes dudes. Like he's gonna smack a dude at the point of attack. And he said that's what he wants to do. He wants to take your head off. And I mean, he was literally the best player in college football last season, won the Bednarik Award. For him to be there where the Steelers got him, I had him in my mock going off the board, you know, one pick earlier in the third round. And I was surprised he fell as far as he did. I mean, like Tyron Hopper from Missouri went ahead of him. Like a lot of off-ball linebackers went ahead of him that really, on talent alone, should not have gone off the board ahead of him. And I know, you know, Rappaport had, what, 22 teams were worried about his medicals and him being a one-contract player. But I think Daniel Jeremiah said it. If you get, even if the injuries are an issue, if you get Peyton Wilson for 3 years, that's a better investment where they got him than if you took one of the other linebackers on the board and had him for 8 years because he's just that talented. So, I mean, yeah, it's a pick that the national media and a lot of these draft gurus and Brian Baldinger really, really love. And I mean, I'm in the same boat. I kind of fell in love with him after the combine. You put him on my radar a little bit there. And just watching him on tape is just, he's so fun to watch and just uber talented. I mean, as a blitzer, he had like 6.5 sacks last season. And I think he's 13 career interceptions. He's just kind of a do-it-all linebacker. And that's the kind of guy the Steelers have kind of been lacking in that room. And along with Patrick Queen, that could be a really impressive, you know, inside linebacker duo for years to come.
Yeah, his 1 year production just in 2023 that earned him the Bednarik and the Butkus, and also consensus first team All American at NC State there. His production was more than you see with some guys' entire collegiate careers in 1 year. And so this is a guy, he told me at the Senior Bowl, if there are 90 snaps in a game, he doesn't want to come off the field. He wants to make 90 tackles. So that's his mentality. He's always around the ball. He's got the interceptions as well. I mean, pretty much every stat column, he had at least one or two in there. So, you know, he had a defensive touchdown, I think, as well. And so this is a playmaker. And like you said, I think just given the fact that he's been healthy for 2 years, he talked about kind of his nutrition and how that's been a part of his kind of making sure he's healthy moving forward. He wanted to get to the right play weight. He felt he was a little too light previously and it wasn't protecting him as well. And so these are some things that make me kind of hopeful that, you know, I don't think he really will be much of an injury risk early on in his career. Now, obviously, if like any player, if an injury happens, it'll be really unfortunate for him, just given the history, and who knows what that will mean at that point. But really, any player has the risk of an injury, and so you can't really go about it singling him out in that way. So I was very excited about this pick. I didn't end up putting him in my mock, so props to you for doing that. And I think the Steelers were kind of benefited from the Dallas Cowboys selecting Maris Liufau or whatever from Notre Dame just a handful of picks before that. They have kind of a history with linebackers that have injury issues, and so I bet you that probably scared them away from a guy like Peyton Wilson, even though if you look at their tape, Wilson is the better product right now, at least, than Liufau. Sorry if I butchered his name there, but yeah, great pick. And so the first four picks in the Steelers draft all have a chance at contributing early, if not right away. Peyton Wilson, probably not right away, but, you know, he's one injury away, and that inside linebacker group had five or six different starters last year. And so you're talking about, you know, he's really close to being an impact player on the Steelers if any other injuries happen. Obviously, Cole Holcomb's still up in the air. If he returns, that room will be a little more crowded with Alandon Roberts and Patrick Queen. But I'm sure they will find a way to get him on the field, especially if they agree with those reports that he's a one-contract player. They're going to want to get the most out of him right now. The fourth-round pick, Mason McCormick out of South Dakota State. This was one that a lot of people were kind of, I guess, puzzled by at first, just because, you know, the Steelers do have two guards that are, you know, pretty set in their starting roles. I wouldn't expect Mason McCormick to push either of James Daniels or Isaac Seumalo for a starting spot. But if you look at kind of the Steelers' last couple years, they've been remarkably healthy on the offensive line, and you just can't expect that to continue. So now they've got all this higher-level starters on the line in Fautanu and Frazier to pair with who they already had, and now they're adding a guard into the mix that really can fill in at either of the three interior offensive lineman spots. I had him in my mock draft in the fourth round as the center because I didn't think Frazier would be there. And so when they got him, you know, Frazier, they did announce him as a guard. But I think yesterday, Troy on our site dug up something from his, was it offensive line coach or offensive coordinator there at South Dakota State, saying that the Steelers flew out and worked him out at center in the weeks leading up to the draft or something along those lines. So yeah, they view him as a guy who can probably play all three interior positions. He played more guard in college. And so this is another kind of, maybe not an immediate need, but it will become a need in the near future, presumably with James Daniels on his last year of his contract, Isaac Seumalo, 30 years old. You did his scouting report. Were you excited to see Mason selected by the Steelers?
Going back to Peyton Wilson for a second, I accidentally said he has 13 career interceptions. He only has seven. I have too many stats floating in my head, so I just want to get that right for anybody listening out there. But I was thoroughly took Mason McCormick. I didn't think it would happen because, again, I thought maybe they'd view him as a center. But when you look, last year they didn't really have a backup center. And so after, you know, Troy's article from the South Dakota State offense coordinator that he could be that backup center and he can play some guard. Like you said, James Daniels' contract's up. He missed some games last year. Nate Herbig played, and just give yourself some insurance on that offensive line and add a guy in McCormick who he's a bully. And one thing I want to point out too is, you know, talking to some of these guys and you're reading after the draft is like on the field, like they're going to go and they're going to demolish you and just mess you up. But off the field, like they're great people. Like I think Mason McCormick said in his conference call, like there's no reason not to be nice off the field. Like, and just talking to him, like he's just He's a gentle giant, but yeah, there's, I mean, there's, I love the way he blocks in the run game. Pass protection, he's you know, pretty solid. He's pretty stout. Obviously, the FCS competition, you know, not great week in and week out. Sometimes on tape, you know, his lack of his body stiffness, you know, maybe a lack of awareness sometimes. But when he has a guy in his sights when he's pulling, he'll rough him up. He'll go and he finishes his blocks. That's one thing I love. You know, you go, you knock a guy down, you dive on top of him, and you go up for hit the next guy or stay on. Like, just watching him, he's gonna move people. He's gonna demolish them. And I was very excited to see him. His guard depth, I think I do view him as a, you know, potential future starter. I think he needs a little more time to develop, you know, get used to NFL competition, the players he's gonna be going up against in the NFL on, you know, a weekly basis or a daily basis in practice. But I love the pick as depth. Sam Amala's not getting any younger. Daniels, who knows what the contract situation is going to be. We saw the guard market kind of explode in free agency. So the Steelers decide that, you know, they don't want to pony up. I mean, Robert Hunt, I think, got like $100 million, and I think James Daniels is probably a pretty comparable player, but I don't think James Daniels is going to get $100 million, obviously. But, you know, we'll see.
At least not from the Steelers, probably.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. So somebody might pony up, because I think Hunt got from Carolina. One of those franchises kind of desperate. But so yeah, if Daniels becomes too expensive, then you can slot in McCormick. Kirby's also a free agent after the season, so maybe who knows what'll happen there. I wouldn't be surprised if they brought him back. But if they view McCormick as a better long-term option, he could start. I just really love I love what he can do. I think there's a lot of room for development there. And I mean, we talked about experience with Frazier and Furtado a little bit. This guy's got a ton of experience. I mean, he's gonna come into the league, I think he'll be 24. He started like he played like 70 games. I think he started like 56 straight. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, he's just always on the field. 3-year captain too at South Dakota State. Guys, teammates, you know, really seem to love. Just definitely a pick I was very on board with. I was surprised I didn't go slot corner there, but I'm not going to complain because I love the selection of McCormick.
Yeah, and he's a guy who at a smaller school was being offered NIL money to leave, and he basically was like, you know what, this South Dakota State program has poured so much into me, I'm not going to leave them like that. And so I bet you that was pretty attractive to the Steelers as well. They all the guys that we've talked about so far that they drafted, and really the whole class, are really big hearts and smarts guys. We know the Steelers put a premium on that. And you know, two of the players that we've talked about so far have been wrestlers. This next guy in the sixth round, the first of the sixth round picks, Logan Lee out of Iowa, it was another high school state champion wrestler. And I want to get through these quick so we can get to our next topic. So Logan Lee, he's one of those guys that in Alex Kozura's study of what the Steelers look for in drafting defensive linemen, that looks at their measurables and their kind of their testing numbers. He checked. He was one of the, you know, handful that checked every single box. And so I'm not going to tell you this is a great pick or a home run of a pick in the sixth round. He's a developmental player, but he has a lot of the tools, you know, kind of the right kind of clay to work with to turn him into something in this system. And so I think that part is attractive. And let's get your thoughts on Ryan Watts, the second of the sixth round picks, the Steelers' final pick in the draft there, from Texas, defensive back.
Yeah, he was a guy that caught my eye a little bit at the Shrine Bowl. He made some plays, especially those like short red zone drills. I think he had like a couple interceptions in one of them. Yeah, he had a combine meeting with the Steelers, and I think he said it was his favorite meeting. And he's a big corner. He's 6'2". He's one of those guys. He might be a safety. He might be a corner. I think given where the Steelers are at right now in the cornerback room, they're going to give him every crack to compete for a job at cornerback, because right now you're really banking on potential behind Dante Jackson and Joey Porter Jr. with Corey Trice, Darius Rush, and you add another guy like Watts to the mix. I've talked about it before. You get another young guy in that room, it's going to elevate the room as a whole. Everybody competing to get better. But Watts is a guy I know. I thought he had pretty solid ball skills from what I saw out of him. Obviously, coming from a great program at Texas, and seems like a really high character kid, and absolutely worth a flyer at the end of the sixth round. I think that was, actually pretty good value for him as well, which is kind of a theme of the entire class for the Steelers. So pretty happy. They did address cornerback in some capacity, even though it was a little bit later than some people wanted. But I think given the way the board broke, it kind of worked out that they didn't feel the need to address it earlier, which is good, because they got a lot of talent in this draft.
And we've talked about they have options to bring back at corner. They can bring back Patrick Peterson or Shandon Sullivan, or both potentially if they feel the need. Both are currently still free agents. And then just during the draft, Jerry Dulac of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported that Cam Sutton had a meeting with the Steelers, and Omar Khan spoke about that on, was it the McAfee show or one of the appearances he just recently had, spoke about Sutton and their conversation with him. And he said, we'll see. He didn't immediately shut it down. Now, obviously, Sutton's got the legal stuff going on. We don't know if the NFL is going to do any kind of discipline. It was kind of reduced from a felony to a misdemeanor. And, they probably still have a lot more investigating to do to see what's going to go on there. And it kind of would be out of character for the Steelers with the character stuff, but they do have 6 years of experience with him. They know him as a person very well. So who knows? But there are options kind of at corner, and, you know, also players will be getting cut from rosters around the league after the draft, like always. Moving on to our next topic here. Significant playmaker watch has been the buzzword of the week around the Steelers universe. It all started with Bryant McFadden, the former corner, tweeting that Omar Khan was cooking something up and that there was a significant playmaker coming to town for the next, 24 and then 48 and then now 72, whatever hours. Nothing has happened. There's countless rumors linking it to this receiver and that receiver, pretty much how it was leading up to the draft as well, but lumping maybe some more additional names into that. And then McFadden came onto the, was it The Fan, 93.7 The Fan yesterday on Wednesday, and basically said, I heard that from a third or a fourth hand source. So more or less walking back what he said. He probably worded the initial tweet a little too strong and all that. But our Dave Bryan talked about an interesting option that he posted this morning on the site, DK Metcalf, and why that could maybe make sense on a post-June 1 trade. So it wouldn't be for another month or two, or at least another month. But DK Metcalf, what are your thoughts there?
I mean, he's got the familiarity with Russell Wilson. He's a big play guy. He would be pretty awesome next to George Pickens. You know, the two of them would, I think, complement each other really well, especially with Roman Wilson underneath. It would be an addition that I'm going to be a huge fan of, depending on the cost. Seattle locked up Tyler Lockett to, a restructured deal. Lockett wants to stay there. They have Jackson Smith and Jigba. So they have the pieces in place at receiver that they could make a move if they want to. It would obviously happen, I think, later in the offseason, like we said, post-June 1st. I think any of these, if they do make a trade for a receiver, is going to happen later in the offseason. Moving a guy right after the draft is something, you really kind of see happen because you don't have the current year's picks to work on. It's another year until the next draft. It's just not really a thing that happens all that often in the NFL. So I think it would be a little bit of a waiting game for them to make a trade to add one of those, like a Metcalf or even a Cortland Sutton. But, a Metcalf addition would be pretty awesome. He's had some really impressive seasons. Like they said, Russell Wilson knows him, and he would be a great fit. I mean, he could be a number one or a number two. And Doug Whaley said yesterday, George Pickens is a number two. I think the stats last year don't necessarily back that up. But Metcalf is another, top receiver option that you could put him wherever you need him to.
Yeah, and check out the post on the site that went up this morning from Dave, but he breaks down the salary cap side of it and why he thinks, the Seahawks are strapped for cap room and probably need to clear room in some form or fashion to do things like sign their draft class because they currently don't even have enough money to do that. So very, very good post from Dave that went up at midnight early this morning. Our third and final topic here was something that came up this morning, though it was from something at the draft party, which was live during the draft with Cam Hayward hosting via his Not Just Football podcast. It went up on his YouTube channel this morning, and I found something very interesting in there. Jaylen Warren, the running back, first of all, they asked about if he would like to return kicks under the new kickoff return rules. He said, well, maybe I would. But then he dropped a very interesting nugget saying that special teams coach, presumably Danny Smith, wants to see Justin Fields back there returning kicks. So that is kind of the talk of today, at least so far early in the day. What are your thoughts on the possibility of a quarterback being there opposite Cordarrelle Patterson?
It's interesting because the viability of it, you wouldn't normally think, you know, a quarterback maybe like could be a long-term starter, could maybe even play this season. You really want him back there returning kicks with a risk of injury, exposed to a lot of hits. But then you, I mean, the whole reason they made these new kickoff rules is, you know, for player health and player safety, and then adding the excitement back into the game with this form that is supposed to, you know, still be a little bit safer. So maybe it's not as much of an injury risk. It's still definitely risky, but I mean, you look at Fields in the video you clipped in your post, his ball carrier vision, his speed in the open field. I mean, I think Warren said him or Calvin Austin are the fastest two guys on the team, being one of them, be Fields or Calvin Austin, and his speed, his ball carrier vision, his strength. I mean, a team's going to have two guys back there as return. So you could have Patterson. Right now, we don't really know that number two guy is. I mean, I guess it could be Austin, even though he's more of a punt returner than a kick returner. If it's Fields, I think he'd be really, really good at it. But the question just becomes if it's a risk the Steelers are willing to take. But given his traits as a runner, I think it's something that, you know, would be very interesting and could add another, you know, sneaky element to the Steelers special teams and, you know, really bolster that return game with these new kickoff rules.
Yeah, I'd probably classify this as unlikely to happen, but it would be very, very fun, if nothing else. Count me down as wanting to see at least one of those. And I think I pulled up in that article, there was a backup quarterback that returned kicks in the not-so-distant past there. Webb. What's his first name there?
Joe Webb.
Joe Webb.
Yeah, and he actually some games for the Vikings, I think, back in the day, too.
Yeah.
He returned for what, Carolina?
He returned for Carolina, and he actually returned, I think, just one kick in the Super Bowl 50 that the Panthers were in. And so, you know, there is some at least precedent of that. Obviously, Webb's not a guy they viewed as a potential future starter like Fields, so it's a risk tolerance thing there to get past. But we'll see. I think that there's going to be a lot of interesting things with the kick return rules changing this year, and who knows what NFL teams are going to pull out of their bag of tricks with that situation. All right, well, I think that's all of our topics. We're going to move into one listener question here today. This person did not leave a name, but we're going to go ahead and play the question for you guys. Let me rewind it here. All right.
Hey, Ross and Joe. Ross, you're from Nashville and Joe's from Boston. I'm just curious how you all became Steelers fans.
All right. Thank you to whoever left that question. The question was, how did we become Steelers fans? I'm in Nashville. Joe is in Boston. Joe, how did that come about for you?
Yeah, so my dad grew up in the 70s, but he moved around between Massachusetts and New Jersey. And so the Steelers, you know, the one team that was always on TV. And obviously the Steel Curtain, 70s Steelers dynasty, easy team to root for. But then, you know, he stuck with it through Mark Malone and Bubby Brister and, you know, the 80s and 90s. And I was born in 2000. So I just grew up into it. And I mean, I grew up 15 minutes from Gillette Stadium. So I unfortunately suffered through 6 Patriots Super Bowls, but the Steelers were always competitive. They're always in it. They usually did end up getting beat by the Patriots, and I caught a lot of flack for it. But I mean, that's my team. I hate the Patriots with, you know, every fiber of my being, especially Robert Kraft now. But I was going to make a joke there, but I'm going to opt against it. But yeah, no. So I just, my dad, I was a Steelers fan and I grew up into it. And that was how I became. It was just kind of passed down to me. I mean, everything else, I'm Boston, I'm Bruins, Celtics, Red Sox. But, you know, Steelers are probably my number one team. And yeah, I love them.
Yeah, for me, I was actually born in Pittsburgh. I was there until I was 6 months old. I was born at, I think it no longer exists as a hospital, but St. Francis in downtown. So I was there for 6 months, then we moved to Cincinnati, and then I actually moved back to Pittsburgh for a while. But all of my extended family are still in the area. My parents both went to, you know, high school. My dad was at Highlands. My mom was at Shaler. And you know, so I have extensive ties to the area, and keeping up with my fandom with the Steelers has kind of been my way to stay plugged in with where I'm from. So, you know, as I moved around, I moved several times to many different places. And my Steelers fandom has kind of followed me wherever I went, including I moved to Seattle just a few days before the Steelers and the Seahawks played in the Super Bowl. So you can imagine the new kid in school getting heckled a little bit with my Steelers gear, especially with that, I guess, controversial at times Super Bowl with some of the calls that went down. So that is all for our episode today. Thank you guys for tuning in. Please do call the number at the bottom of the screen there, 412-254-3145, and leave us a question for a chance to get it answered in next week's episode. We do appreciate you guys tuning in, and we will catch you next time.